Welcome to another JPR Live session where we get to have conversations with artists we admire and one-of-a-kind in-studio performances. Live sessions are made possible in part with support from the Talent Club in downtown Talent, Oregon. Their live music calendar at talentclublive.com. I'm your host, Danielle Kelly. John Griffin is our sound engineer in the booth. Hailing from originally Wisconsin, visiting from his home in New England, roots rock Americana singer-songwriter Jeffrey Foucault. The New Yorker describes his music as stark, literate songs that are as wide open as the landscape of his native Midwest. New York Times calls him contemporary and timeless. He's become a staple artist in the JPR's open-air library here. We're excited to have this opportunity to have him here with us today. And on tour in the studio today, joining Jeff is Eric Kosnikin. Both got guitars in hand. Welcome, you guys. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
The pair are performing with the full band tonight at the Unitarian Fellowship in Ashland. That's an Ashland Folk Collective show. So you can find tickets and information about the show at ashlandfolkcollective.com. It's at 7 o'clock tonight. That is not just the two of you, but the full band, correct?
Yeah, full band.
Very cool. Very cool. It's really gracious of you two to make time to be with us here today. Thank you so much. How's this West Coast tour been going?
It's been really nice. We started in Los Angeles earlier in the week, and it's just been, we're working every night for 12 nights, so, you sort of have this, like, eternally evolving present as you go along, you know, like, it seems as though we've been doing this for about 5,000 years, but it's only been a couple nights.
How long have you been together with this band, this configuration?
Everybody in the band has played together for sort of different lengths, and actually, Eric here is the most recent addition, I guess. But so Eric and I have played together since maybe 2019, and then Eric Haywood, our pedal steel player, I started playing with him in 2006, and the bass player Moses, I played with him since 2009, and our drummer is a drum tech for the Rolling Stones and U2, so he's mostly out on the road doing drum tech stuff. But he and I used to have a country band together years ago, back in before my daughter was born, so like 06 07, where we just show up at a bar and play country music, no rehearsal.
What was that band called?
That was called High Country Lo-Fi.
Is that something we can find archived? We got
no,
copies
no
of,
that?
No proof.
No, the rules, it was just whoever was off the road would show up at a bar, and we would play mid-century country music, and the rules were no rehearsal, and you had to sing it in the key it was written.
Oh, my gosh.
And whether you could sing it or not. And we opened every night with Big River by Johnny Cash, and also closed every night with Big River. And they were substantially different versions by the end of the night.
It looks, reviewing your tour schedule on your website, you've got this solid week of shows back to back, and the same for December. And then it seems like you've got the rest of the month off. Is that sort of your approach to touring? Your New England, your home is New England, and then you're on the road for a week at a time. The month, is that year round?
We have this brand new record called The Universal Fire, and that came out in early September. So really, starting on the last day of August, we've been out, and we'll be out 2 weeks a month. So half of every month we're out. We did the Northeast in September. We did the Mountain West, sort of Montana, Wyoming, Colorado in October. And then we're doing the West Coast now for 2 weeks, and then we go out to finish up in the upper Midwest, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois, Iowa. And we'll do that in December. And then we're going to sit still a little bit in the winter. We just haven't hoisted the dates. There'll be some more dates in February, March, April, you know. But my wife's going to put on a record, so that means I have to stay home for a little while.
Jeffrey Foucault is our guest live in the studio on support of Universal Fire, the new record out this September on Fluff and Gravy. We've been spinning it here on Open Air. Can't wait to hear a song. What do you guys want to start with?
We're going to start with a song called Solo Modelo. I wrote this one sort of like a postcard to our dear friend and departed drummer Billy Conway. It goes like this. Solo modelo, solo hotel, solo I can't tell you, but I'm wishing you well. Solo gas station,
Solo cafe. Solo, I've been crying since he went away. You went away. You went away. And I know you've been walking the valley alone. One crow above you, it won't leave you alone. I know you've been singing your way through the dark. Your silk scarf and denim don't keep you warm. No. Solo black coffee, solo green room, solo at midnight, and I still solo at noon. Solo Milwaukee, solo LA, solo I've been thinking about just walking away, walking away, walking away, walking away. I think I'm walking away. Solo Modelo, solo Modelo.
Solo Modelo, that is Jeffrey Foucault's new song from Universal Fire, the new record out here live at the Steve Nelson Performance Studio. You can hear them and the band live. That's Eric Koskinen joining him on the Koskinen. I've got it spelled in front of me, and my dyslexia has got the best of me. The two will be with the full band at the Unitarian Fellowship tonight in Ashland. That's going to be really great. You mentioned Billy Conway before you started, that's sort of a postcard to him. And I was reading about the album a little bit, you know, getting ready to talk to you today. And I was really touched by that. And I wondered, what has it been like to have an album that's sort of dedicated to someone that was so close to you? Like, is that heavy, or is it sort of freeing to be kind of reliving that every night and talking about it like this? What's that
like? It's heavy and light at the same time. That's a great way to think about it. You know, making songs or, you know, what, any kind of art out of grief is a pretty useful process. You're going to deal with it whether you want to or not. So that just means you'll either deal with it well or you'll deal with it badly. So making a point of sort of funneling it into your creative thing is a good way to do it. And then, you know, to go out and play every night and have it songs that are talking about stuff that's relatively close to home. At any given moment, it might feel sort of heavy, but for the most part, it's, you know, it's a beautiful, really joyful thing to play music with people that you love and, you know, play for people that are having a good time. And this is all music. I really worked hard to make it, even if the subject matter was pretty heavy. It's all fun music. You can dance to most of it. And this got this outrageous band, so it's a joyful way to go about it, which is, you know, the way it should be.
Yeah, certainly. And I heard that there was this story that I'd love for you to tell, the significance of that was also sort of an influence on this album, something about a fire happening at Universal Studios. Maybe that's where the name Universal Fire came from. Could you tell us what that's about and how that's...
Yeah. So the Universal Fire, you know, as a name, it sounds kind of like a... existential proposition or like a woo-woo thing, but it is to some extent, but it's also this thing that happened, which the Universal Fire was this big fire at Universal Studios lot in California where they housed like not only the bell tower from the Back to the Future, you know, fake courthouse square and like maybe part of King Kong, but also all this really important American music, the master recordings of a lot of the music that I really care about and to me the most important stuff, like blues music, the stuff from Chess Records, the stuff that became early rock and roll, and some jazz, you know, Billie Holiday, stuff like that. So that fire, at first they weren't sure what they had lost, and then it seemed as though they'd lost everything, and then later it seemed as though they lost not quite as much as they thought, but it was all this really bedrock music, and I didn't find out about it at the time. I read about it later, and I just wrote down the phrase, and because what was interesting to me wasn't necessarily the fact that it happened, but the question that it raises about what it means to lose something, right? And so when I lost my best friend, then it seemed like a useful way to set up a frame for a bunch of songs. So I already had the phrase written down, and it was sort of just that was like the box I was going to put everything into, not necessarily writing toward it, but just seeing how the things that I came up with related to it once they already existed, you know, like once you put something in relationship to something else, then you discover what the natural affinities might be between those things, context wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've read that you've been greatly influenced by it. You mentioned some of the people that were deeply influential to you, and I've heard you talk about Willie Nelson and Guy Clark and Townes Van Zandt and John Prine and Rodney Crowell. And I'm always so excited when I get to sit in here and talk with singer-songwriters because I go, oh, goody, we get a story time now. Okay. They're so great at telling stories. And I would love to hear you talk about meeting some of your influences. You're a beautiful writer too, by the way.
Thanks.
If you visit jeffreyfocalt.com, he's got a section called News, and there are little blurbs that will keep you informed, but they're also just lovely, delightful pieces of writing. And you shared getting called up on stage by Rodney Crowell, and I just wonder, like, what could you talk about how that felt like and tell us that story?
Yeah, this just happened last, this, I guess it happened in September when I got off the road. A friend of mine used to tour manage for Rodney for a long time. She lives out in Montana. And she said, I sent your record to Rodney, really liked it, and he wants to be in touch. Can I give him your phone number? And I was like, yeah. I mean, I love Rodney Crowell. So we got in touch, and we were sort of emailing back and forth, or rather text messaging back and forth. And he was saying stuff about the records, and I said, of course, I'd cut my teeth by listening to his, especially that Leaving Louisiana record, an early one. And so we were having this nice exchange, and then he was coming to town to play the club near where I live, and it happened that I was going to be home, so I said, you know, I'll come down and say hi. He said, yeah, that'd be great. And then a couple of days go by, and I was standing in the kitchen doing the dishes, and I heard the phone go bang, and I dried my hands off and picked it up, and it was Rodney. He was like, don't be surprised if I call you up on stage. And I thought, well, that's completely crazy, because I wouldn't do that with some dude I never met before, no matter how much I liked his record. So I thought he was just kind of pulling my leg. Then I didn't think about it again until I got down there, and I'd had, like, you know, a couple beers, and I was standing in back just like enjoying the music, and he's playing with a real good fiddle and mandolin player from Nashville. And then, sure enough, he just said, I have a friend in the audience, this young guy that he called me young, which is sort of sweet. He just called me up on stage. I thought my heart was going to leap out of my throat because I was not ready. I didn't have my, you know, game face on. I wasn't thinking about being on stage at all. But, I played this song called Sometimes Love that is sort of a, It's to me, it's like a Rodney Crowell song because it's about someone who is attracted by a bad idea and finds it.
Very cool. It's always fun for me to hear all kinds of people getting starstruck by it's like such a human thing to feel that way. I lost my train of thought. What? How about? Can we hear another song? You guys got some.
You know, the meeting your heroes thing, like. Sometimes it's great And then sometimes it, you know, you don't, it might not be a great idea because you never know. Like Dorothy Parker, the writer, she said wanting to meet a writer because you like something they've written is like wanting to meet a duck because you like pate. And it gets to this problem about the difference between a person and the stuff that they, you know, create or whatever. So it can be sort of uneven. One of the biggest influences is Greg Brown, and he and I have become real good friends, and that has been this real grace note in my life because there's questions I can ask him. He's the same age as my dad, right? And like, there's questions I can ask him that my dad would not have the answer for because of the difference in their life experience, you know? So just to have somebody that's kind of like an elder that way can be really beautiful. Yeah, let's do a tune. This is another one from the new record. This is called Monterey Rain. This whole thing is sort of a long conversation. I guess there's no pedal steel intro here, so maybe I'll just... Did you want to see a movie with the rain coming down? You said it's all a movie when you're in a strange town, in a hotel room with a Bible and a phone book. The good news and the bad luck. Well, I said, one's gonna answer. You said, Jesus got my number, but I don't know how. Monterey rain, Monterey rain, Monterey rain, Monterey rain. Neon and nostalgia is all that's left of this town. Green cup and gold, the great feast, the lost few even now. Tide comes in and the money does. Who knows how it ever was? I said, memory's just a racket. You said, everything's a racket, even love somehow. Monterey rain, Monterey rain, Monterey rain, Monterey rain. Come on. Well, are you gonna hold the line and leave your heart out on the weather side? Is there something that you hope to find, or is it gone? Alvarado up the lighthouse, no one around. Lights change in the darkness, they don't make a sound. But we were just smoking in the cold rain, standing under the overhang. I said, it's never gonna be easy. You said, I don't want it easy, I wanna know how. Monterey rain, Monterey rain, Monterey rain, Monterey rain.
That's Monterey Rain, Jeffrey Foucault's new record, Universal Fire. That's Jeffrey Foucault live here at JPR with Eric Koskinen here on the other guitar they're playing tonight. Tonight's show in Ashland is at the Universal Fellowship in Ashland. It's a church. Holds, I think, a couple hundred people. It's a beautiful space, you know, stained glass, the whole nine.
Yeah.
But it's a church. It's not a music venue. And thinking about that, I heard you have a conversation with, I think, David Green on NPR about being, what did he say, a musician, being a musician, you know, sort of means playing a lot of small bars in a lot of small towns. And of course, that delighted me. You know, we live in a pretty small rural area here, you know, all across our regional, listening region here. And that's, you know, where we listen to a lot of music, a lot of us in these small places. And you said something that absolutely delighted me as well, that was that, you know, some of those small bars and small places where you're cramming people in, you know, maybe 100 people, maybe less, is sort of, I think you said maybe your favorite or some of the best places to listen to music. And I just love that you said that. And I maybe thought maybe you could speak to that a little bit and why you feel that way.
Well, actually, you know, talking about Greg Brown, not too long ago, we were spending a couple days fishing and we were sitting on a park bench looking at Lake Superior up in northern Wisconsin. We were talking about, we had both read this Howlin' Wolf biography recently, and so we were talking about that book. And, you know, the thing that struck both of us was that, well, there's two things. Like, Wolf, you know, he learned from Charlie Patton, and but the guys in his band, Wolf, all the guys that were making records at that time after World War II, but sometimes, you know, sort of from the 30s through when everybody went up to Chicago and plugged in, they all knew each other, and they all played the same rooms, and that was sort of mind-bending to me that they were all friends. But then the other thing was all that really important music happened in rooms of less than 100 people for the most part, and it happened every night. And that's true around the whole United States. You know, like Eric's band in the Midwest is for my money, the best working band in the whole middle of the country, and they're playing for, you know, a couple hundred people, maybe 300 people here, 100 people there in these little towns. And that's still has to be the wellspring of where music comes from if you're going to keep the wheel turning and not just have everything be the equivalent of like a Civil War reenactment of music, right? Like it has to keep changing. And that means you have to, you know, pay attention to the stuff that's coming up, not the stuff that happened, you know, 40, 50 years ago. We have a sort of this weird cultural, you know, back eddy where everything, if you got famous in any time after World War II, you're still famous now, but it's very difficult for anybody to get into the business. And you know, youngsters are like, well, I'll go on TikTok or something. But that's the same mindset as buying a lottery ticket on the way home from work. You know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. How do you feel about being like music as a career? Like how,
ambivalent.
Yeah. And how, let's see. And it's a kind of an unconventional path, right? And I hear a lot of artists, I maybe have heard you mention too, just about like, you know, there's the art and then there's this other thing that you have to do. You have to be this salesperson and this promoter. And like, how do you view all that? How do you deal with that?
Well, you do what you have to do. I mean, everybody's got a job where there's parts that they don't love doing. So I don't particularly love dealing with the internet, but I do it all the time because we have to. There's no other way to reach everybody. But it's a shame because, you know, talking about those people that got famous in the 20th century, you know, somebody like Little Richard or Chuck Berry, people that utterly changed American music, those people would not have been able to get out the front door without help. They were great at playing music. They were geniuses, but there's no reason to assume that somebody that has the skill set to do that also has the skill sets of like a real estate agent and a brand manager and a pimp and all the other things that we have to be in order to do this job. So it kind of feels like you're the carnival attraction and you're out front selling tickets in one outfit. And then in the moment you sell the tickets, you run around to the back and you put on the other outfit and walk out on stage. And the shame of it is there's so many really good people who will probably not be able to get a lot of traction because they're not good at promoting themselves. Or they're just unwilling to because it's demeaning on a pretty basic level. So you know, we're not going to find out about those people.
Yeah.
At least not in the model that we have now. I mean, thankfully, you know, there's radio like this where there's still, you can still achieve a sort of regional penetration that is meaningful, because radio was magic. It still is magic. I wish it was, I wish we could go back and amend the 96 FCC law that that ate so many radio stations, you know.
Yeah. You mentioned you have a daughter. How old is your daughter?
My daughter is 16. She'll be 16 and a half on Christmas. I know that because that's when you can get your driver's license in Massachusetts. And I'm...
She's going to 26.
Here comes.
Yeah, that's right.
He's almost 26.
Right. She's been 30 since she was 10. That's kind of, that's her vibe, but she'll be fine.
I love asking musical parents what your relationship with music is with your children, and how, you know, and like the music career, like, is that something that you promote as something that's a career path option? Is she interested in music? How do you share music together?
She gets so mad when she goes to career day at like junior high school. And, you know, they'll be like, what do you want to do? She's like, well, I write a lot of songs. I think I'll be a musician. And they're like, oh, honey, that's not, you know, that's not a real job. And, you know, we live in a small rural place. That's what I was told. You know, it never occurred to me until I was well out of college that you could do this for a job. And if she wants to do it, she will be able to do it. She's a fantastic musician. She's a beautiful singer, and she writes great songs. So we mostly encourage her to slow down and try to be something before she tries to share a lot of stuff on the internet, right? Mm-hmm. So she's working on her craft. She already has a really sophisticated sense of melody and composition. Certainly, you know, I didn't even learn to play guitar till I was older than she is now. So she has her mom's gift for putting melodies and structures together, and she'll be fine. I mean, I think music will always be a resource for her. If it makes money, that's one thing, but it's not, you know, it's not money first. It's just, it's what she does. It's what, when she's happy, she plays music, and when she's sad, she plays music, and yeah. There you go.
Yeah. That's really neat to hear. Jeffrey Focalt has a new album out. It's called The Universal Fire. Eric, you've got a new album out too. As Jeffrey mentioned, you've got your own band. What did you say? Best band for your money in the Midwest.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a mouthful.
He sort of owns the state of Minnesota, as far as I can tell.
And I've got the record right here that you just handed to me. The new one is called Down Street Love Avenue. And Eric, you're opening the show tonight. So if y'all go to the Ashland Folk Collective show tonight in Ashland, you'll get to hear Eric's music too. Tell me a little bit about your new album.
Well, I guess it's just kind of like what it says. It's a bunch of love songs written during the global pandemic that we had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Written about the strong women in my life, and that's pretty much it, really. That's the whole, I mean, you know, you guys have been so good at talking so far.
Right. I mean, lead guitar players, you know, they lead guitar, so they don't have to talk.
This is great. Well, I think you guys were mentioning before the mics came on that maybe we'd hear one of those songs from that album. Do you guys want to play one for
us? Yeah, let's do it.
Eric Roskin, sure.
Yeah. We're on tune. I might turn this mic down for myself a little bit. Keep my baby with me.
Yeah.
I'm on my way to heaven. At least that's what I'm hoping for. The gods, they must be crazy, so I'm knocking on their door. 'Cause my money's all gone, but my luck is still around. So I'm making a deal to keep my baby with me now. She's riding on a jet plane with the angels up above. hope she gets my message. My message is love. 'Cause my money's all gone, but my luck is still around. So I'm making a deal to keep my baby with me now. Find another one. 'Cause my money's all gone, but my luck is still around. So I'm making a deal to keep my baby with me now.
That's an Eric Koskinen tune from the new record Down Street Love Avenue called Keep My Baby With Me. That was Jeffrey Foucault on the backing vocals as well. The two are playing tonight at the Ashland Unitarian Fellowship tonight. You can find tickets and information at ashlandfolkcollective.com. More information on these musicians' tour, on their merch. I've heard you got tees. I heard that's a big deal. T-shirts.
Speaking a lot of t-shirts.
Speaking of promotion,
we got the Koskinen action figure. We got a lot of stuff.
Oh my gosh, we've got action figures. We've got t-shirts. It's Eric Koskinen, ERIKKOSKINEN.com for music and information on Eric's music. And Jeffrey Foucault is jeffreyfoucault.com. Mm-hmm. That's spelled
FOUCOULT.
Yeah. And we've been calling you Foucault here for years and years, and I guess
that's
we're not
exactly
alone.
Correct.
But there is a French pronunciation for those of you who would like
it. If you would like to feel elite, you could say Foucault, but there's no reason to do that, at least not in the States.
Oh my gosh. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thank you
and
very much
for
having us.
Have a wonderful show. Keep us posted and up to date on your music. Please come through next time you're on town and on tour. Mm-hmm. It's been a pleasure. Really great, exceptionally great day to focus on music today.
True.
John Griffin of Luna Zen Studios has been our sound engineer.
John.
Thanks everybody for doing this. We will have our live sessions archived on our website later today along with some photos. And you can also find our JPR live sessions archived on our website, and anywhere you find your podcasts. This live session has been made possible by the Talent Club in Talent, Oregon. It is great music, cold drinks, and a casual atmosphere. You can find their live music schedule at talentclublive.com. Thanks again, you guys.
Thank you.
Open Air will continue right after this.
Thank you.